The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
In this big fat book by Neil Harding called Lenin's Political Thought, it's not him, he's quoting someone else, a guy named Edmund Wilson. This is a very common view of Lenin. The theoretical side of Lenin is, in a sense, not serious. It is the instinct for dealing with the reality of the definite political situation which attains in him the point of genius. He sees and he adopts his tactic with no regard for the theoretical positions of others or for his own theoretical positions in the past. Then he supports it with Marxist texts. That's a very common view of Lenin. Lenin basically was a supreme tactician who, whatever he decided to do in the name of expediency at the moment, he supported with texts. In that sense, Lenin is not a serious theoretical figure. I want to argue a different case, quite different case, based on a particular book, or a short book that Lenin wrote in 1917 called State and Revolution. State and Revolution is an interesting book because I think a lot of times when people, because it was, the full text was written out in somewhere around August of 1917, that is, in the middle of the revolution, people assume that Lenin wrote State and Revolution in response to the 1917 revolution. That's, I think, a common assumption. And it was the experience of that revolutionary process that kind of gave life to his argument. In fact, everything that Lenin writes in State and Revolution was based upon a series of notes that he had taken in something which is now called the Blue Notebook that he wrote before the outbreak of the February Revolution. In fact, Lenin had made a theoretical reassessment of the Marxist position on the state and the relationship of the working class movement to the state and state power before the outbreak of the revolution, and he had done it on the basis of a whole series of experiences prior to 1917. I think it's important caveat to add that for Lenin, theory informed practice, but practice also had to inform theory. So in a certain sense, Lenin was a supreme tactician. Lenin was also someone who always understood that to have a firm grounding and know what to do next, you have to have a theoretical basis for what you're doing. But that has to be translated through a series of intermediary stages into what do we do now based on what are the balance of class forces, what are the size of the organizations, what's the level of struggle, that you have to translate theory into practice, but also practice back into theory. That theory itself, this is something you find when you read State and Revolution, that theory itself, he summarizes as being an analysis of accumulated experience. It is conclusions drawn from experience. And so for Lenin, there's a dialectical relationship that is interweaving of theory and practice so that one cannot be separate from the other. If you remove theory from practice, it becomes stale, dry, useless. If you engage in practice without theory, then you're like a leaf blowing in the wind. And you have to understand the relationship between those two things and the constantly changing relationship, not only understand reality, but really to understand Lenin. Because if you look at Lenin throughout his political life, he's constantly going into the library to study. Now, we don't usually think of Lenin that way because Lenin's always writing these articles about what we should be doing now. Even, you know, the book, What is to be Done? It's like everything that Lenin polemicizes about is about what should our movement, given the stage that we're in and the changes that are taking place, the size of our organization, its implantation, the status, what should we do now? What's the next thing we should do? And we're so used to thinking of Lenin that way, we don't realize, or maybe we forget sometimes, that at certain key moments when the world changes in a big way, Lenin's like, I gotta go study this. So in 1914, with the outbreak of World War I, he goes into the British Museum, and what does he study? Hegel. He studies dialectics. He goes in and he writes massive amounts of notebooks and reads like 1,000 books on imperialism. Whenever there's a major question involved, he's like, I gotta study this. So in 1916, Lenin had a whole series of debates with, good, I don't have to put my password in, great. He had a whole series of debates with another Bolshevik named Bukharin. Bukharin, Lenin had been having sharp disagreements with over the national question. Lenin had argued that you cannot build international unity unless workers in oppressor nations stand for the right of self-determination of oppressed nations, because they'll become estranged from each other, and unless you're willing to support the struggles of oppressed peoples against national oppression, you can't build a united working class movement. Bukharin was of the position that the struggle for national self-determination was a pipe dream under imperialism, and we shouldn't support it as a demand. So they had the big fight, and they were angry. Bukharin wanted to set up his own journal. Lenin was pissed off at him for doing that. They weren't talking to each other for a while. In the middle of this, Bukharin writes an article in 1916 about the state. And he publishes it in, I think, in a German journal. And essentially argues the question of imperialism has forced us to relook at the question of the state. Because we look around as the World War has produced these states that are armed to the teeth with massive bureaucracies, these choking bureaucracies that are essentially war machines for hurling millions of people into slaughter. And that the state, the question of the state, has become a key question for us, also because the war is bringing to fore the question of revolutionary change. And so Bukharin in this article says, you know, if you go back to Marx, the position of Marx was not that we should take over the state, the existing bourgeois state, this massive bureaucratic machine, military machine, but that actually we should break it apart. And Lenin's reaction to that is actually part of what was the orthodoxy of the time. Lenin's initial reaction to that is anarchism. That is, the whole history of the social democratic movement to that point, that is, I'm excluding Marx and Engels from this because they had a different view, which is what state and revolution is all about. The argument was, both from revolutionaries and from reformists and everyone in between in the world socialist movement, was that you take over the existing state. The way that we will get socialism is that we will seize the existing state power, and then through control of that state, begin to reorder society in a socialist direction. How you seize that state was what divided the reformists from the revolutionaries. The reformists said, we need to gain a majority in parliament. And the way we do that is, we try to get a majority of votes, and we do that by playing down our politics. And there was kind of a tendency to kind of downplay the radical side of Marxism and a kind of developing what we called at this time opportunism of kind of right-wing social democracy. On the left, Rosa Luxemburg and others, the argument was, you seize the state, but the ruling class won't let you do that without a fight. So it has to be done in a revolutionary way by the mass of the working class. And it's going to involve a violent clash. So that was really the difference. But if you go back and look at what was written about the state by most Marxists after Marx and prior to Lenin's state and revolution, first of all, there's not a lot on the state. There's not a lot of analysis of the state. But also the assumption is that the state, you take over the state, you know, in one of those two ways that I described. Lenin has this debate with Bukharin. And there's one other figure in 1912 in the movement that made a similar argument. His name is Pannekoek. He was a Dutch Marxist. He had a debate with Kautsky, who was the leading theoretician of Marxism in the Second International. He had a German, he was an editor of a journal called Die Neue Zeit. What does that mean? New Life?
New Times,
okay. Good, we got people in German here. That's very useful. Anyway, so, and in this debate, which is about mass struggle, Kautsky basically argues was a centrist position, which was, we can't go too far in either direction. We have to have a kind of Goldilocks approach in which the party is very careful not to overreach and then provoke a reaction from Bismarck and the German state. And so the tried and true test it is slow accumulation of forces, winning of elections. Yes, we'll have to call some strikes. Yes, some mass demonstrations, but we don't want those mass demonstrations to get too out of control because that'll provoke reaction. In other words, a great deal of kind of conservatism had crept into this conception of how the socialist movement would develop in Germany. But in the middle of this debate, Panikok writes an article and he says, This is an opportunist method. We're fighting imperialism. The world has changed. It's going to be mass strikes and mass struggle against the state that's going to be the basis upon which we challenge capitalism. And we will actually have to destroy the existing state. Again, this argument comes in. This is where Kautsky comes in and says, no. The social democratic, the Marxist tradition is that we are going to win control of parliament. And through parliament, transform, and through our control of that institution, begin to make inroads, socialist inroads into society at large and change the society. And in fact, that was essentially, at least among most sections of the left at the time, the orthodoxy. And at the time, it's interesting, Lenin read that exchange in 1912 and considered many of Kautsky's arguments, he wrote a letter to Kamenev about this, to be, quote, opportunist, although Lenin doesn't go into it. Clearly, though, Lenin is not referring to what Kautsky said about the state. And the reason we know that is because Lenin makes the same argument in 1916. In other words, there's something about Kautsky that Lenin thinks is moving towards opportunism, and that's, I think, the kind of passive approach to mass action. But at that point, Lenin is not saying, of course we smash the state. No, Lenin does not agree with that. Nobody agrees with that. Even Trotsky, who was president of the 1905 St. Petersburg Soviet, who talks about Soviets in 1905 as the embryonic workers' government, he doesn't argue that you smash the state. He always talks about the seizure of the state, seizing state power. There's no discussion about the difference between the existing state and whether that's destroyed replaced. I'll go into that more when I talk about what's in state and revolution. So Lenin, in this disagreement with Bukharin, says, all right, I got to study this. So he goes back and he looks at everything that he can get his hands on that Marx and Engels wrote about the state. And lo and behold, he's like, shit, we have been completely wrong. We have been completely wrong about what Marx and Engels have said about the state. Marx learned from the Paris Commune that you cannot seize hold of the ready-made state machine, the existing bourgeois state machine, the working class cannot, and wield it for its own purposes. That state must be dismantled, destroyed, exploded, and replaced by new organs of direct democracy. And the Commune, the Paris Commune of 1871, in which workers held power for 3 months in the city of Paris and threw up their own organs of power, the commune, directly recallable delegates, paid no more than an average workman's wage, a collective armament of the people, not just not separated bodies of armed people, but the collective power of the masses armed and ready to fight is the basis in which a new society can be built. The old state has to be destroyed. And so Lenin goes back and he goes through it, and This is what he says. This is how he introduces state and revolution. He says, the question of the state is now acquiring particular importance both in theory and in practical politics. The imperialist war has immensely accelerated and intensified the process of transformation of monopoly capitalism into state monopoly capitalism. The monstrous oppression of the working people by the state, which is merging more and more with the all-powerful capitalist associations, is becoming increasingly monstrous. The advanced countries, we mean their hinterland, are becoming military convict prisons for the workers. The unprecedented horrors and miseries of the protracted war are making the people's position unbearable and increasing their anger. The world proletarian revolution is clearly maturing. The question of its relation to the state is acquiring practical importance. And so, right from the beginning, Lenin is talking about this monstrous, horrific thing called the state. And of course, when Lenin, this was published in August, Lenin comes on the sealed train from Germany, In April, he arrives in Russia. The czarism has been wiped clean. It's been 5 days of mass protest and mass strikes. The czar has abdicated. You have dual power. Soviets, workers have created Soviets. You have this bourgeois provisional government, which has also been created to try to head the revolution off at the pass, headed by liberals who are afraid of the revolution, putting on some of its garb in order to stop it. And then you have these massive organs of democratic control based on elected delegates from the factories and the soldiers' barracks called the Soviets, which is this alternate power. And they duke it out for the next several months. But Lenin shows up right after the czar's been overthrown. And all the socialists in Russia, including all the Bolsheviks, have the old position, which is, this is a bourgeois revolution, Russia's not ready for socialism, and by the way, if there was going to be socialism, it wouldn't happen through the Soviets. Whoever heard of socialism coming through, no one's ever argued that. The idea that you could have a socialist society and that the Soviets would become a form of workers' power, which could replace the old state, that did not exist anywhere. So Lenin walks in, and he immediately makes a speech that says, we don't need parliaments, we don't need the provisional government, we don't need bourgeois democracy, we need the democracy of the Soviets, and we need a government of the working class and the poorest peasants based in the Soviets as the basis of international socialist revolution. I was like, what? You're like an anarchist. You're Bakunin reincarnated. No one has heard this argument. They don't know where it's coming from. But, you know, what's interesting about it, and Lenin points out in State and Revolution, and what I think is really important about it is so much still today, when people talk about Marxism or socialism and its difference with anarchism, they say, oh yeah, the Marxists are for the state and the anarchists are against the state. And you read State and Revolution, and you're like, and you see what Marx and Engels really said about it, and what Lenin said, and you read that introduction I just read. You're like, this horrible, monstrous state machine that we have to fight against. You realize that really is not what the Marxist tradition is about. And this is what Lenin basically argues in after going through Marx and Engels. He says, one, the state hasn't always existed. The state is a product of society riven by class conflict. That is a society which has been divided by irreconcilable class contradictions. Prior to the rise of class society, you did not need a state that is a separate coercive body to maintain order. In fact, if you go back and look at the Iroquois or any of the sort of pre-class societies in the United States, you'll see that there were no separate armed bodies. There weren't police forces. There weren't anyone could take their weapons and go join a fight against the Crow and Count Coup or whatever. But there was no special group of people that policed the society because society was not divided by class, didn't have class divisions. Things were done more or less democratically. Whenever a war took place, people decided whether they wanted to go or not. You know, I'm going to go do a raid on the boo. Who wants to come with me? I'm busy. Everybody's like, I'm going, you know. Totally different from our society today. So in essence, and this is the essence of the state, is a body which seemingly stands above society that appears to be moderating class differences, but in fact runs society in the interests of the dominant class. But it does so successfully because it appears to stand above the fray and regulate those differences, and which opens, as Lenin talks about, the argument that what the state does is reconcile classes, which is a pretty popular argument. It reconciles conflict, or it regulates conflict. Engels argues, yes, it does. It does regulate conflict. It regulates it in the interest of the dominant class. And if you don't add that caveat, then you don't understand how the state arose or what its role is. It's not a conspiracy of the ruling class. It's a necessary institution when society has become divided by class. But as a necessary institution, by definition, in essence, has to be an institution that ends up defending and protecting the existing order, which is based upon the exploitation of the many by the few. In essence, it is therefore a coercive apparatus. So Lenin uses this phrase, bodies of armed men, prisons, etc. He by no means means to reduce it to that, that he's trying to get at the essence of what the state is. Now, I think I don't have time to go into it, but a lot of people then try to argue that that's a crude argument, that that what you know that there's so much more to the state. There's the whole question of ideology and law and so on. Of course, that's not what Lenin's talking about. He's not arguing that that's only what the state is, but that's the essence, that's the foundation, the cornerstone of understanding the role of the state. And of course, states are far more successful when they can rule by consent than by force. But in the end, and the backup behind of it all, is the coercive apparatus, which you can use when consent fails. I don't have time really to go into that more. The essential argument that Lenin makes is that the bourgeois state, even democracy, parliaments, etc., is a form of class dictatorship. As he quotes Marx saying, a chance for people to choose every 2 to 4 years who is to misrepresent and repress them. Real democracy is curtailed at every step, hemmed in, truncated, restricted. And existing state institutions, therefore, cannot be the basis of the recreation of a new society. Those institutions have to be exploded. The bureaucracies, the military institutions, the entire apparatus of state power has been built up. And he quotes Marx talking about France in the 1850s, saying this machine, this monstrous thing, the state, which keeps getting larger and larger and clogs the pores of society, this state actually has to be destroyed. And he says, I think it's a letter to Kugelman, he says, all previous revolutions have perfected and strengthened the state machine. And of course, as we find out from, you know, in 1871, his analysis of the Paris Commune, what's the next step? You have to smash that machine. You have to replace it. But he doesn't know. He can't answer that question yet because, and Lenin emphasizes this, Marx can't answer that question yet in the 1850s because the question of what would happen in place of that state hasn't been answered by experience. Which brings back the point I made earlier. The question of theory and its derivation from experience is extremely important. Lenin emphasizes it all through State and Revolution. When he talks about Marx, he says, Marx learned from the class. Marx didn't just teach the working class, he learned. So in the Communist Manifesto, Lenin goes through all this, in the Communist Manifesto, Marx says, the working class has to win the battle of democracy. It has to become the ruling class and use its control of the state to transform society. But he doesn't say anything else. And he says, the state is a product of class society and will only disappear when classes disappear. But he doesn't say anything more than that. And it's only through Marx's experiences and Engels' experiences all the way to the Paris Commune that they begin to put much more flesh on that as they go on. Lenin emphasizes that in his excavation of Marx and Engels. So Marx learned from the Commune. And so this is what I said earlier. The working class can't lay hold of the ready-made state machine and wield it for its own purposes. The old state has to be done away with and erected in its place. The armed, democratic, organized people, at the core of which is the working class, which is based on free elections, instant recallability, no official being paid more than an average worker's wage, control from below. But it's still a state, because the state is only necessary when society is divided into classes. But it's not a state in the original sense of the term. It's a state that works itself or aims to work itself out of a job. So the capitalist state, this monstrous bureaucracy, has to be dismantled and replaced by direct forms of democracy. However, those direct forms of democracy are established on the basis of a revolution, which is itself a coercive act. It's a coercive act against the old ruling class. Problem is, when the working class establishes such a society or manages to seek to overthrow the old ruling class, that ruling class doesn't go away. Then you have a period of counter-revolution where they'll do everything in their power to try to mobilize forces to destroy this effort by the working class to change society. And so what Marx, for example, in his debates, he didn't have direct debates, but in his marginal notes to Bakunin's Statism and Anarchy, he says, the only thing we disagree with the anarchists on is not destroying the state. We do need to destroy the state. But the working class still has to erect a state if it wants to suppress the old order in order to create the conditions in which there can be a classless society and the state can disappear. The state, therefore, withers away. The old social democratic position was you take over the existing state and at some point that state will wither away. And the real tradition is you have to smash the existing state, replace it with a commune state, or in the experience of the Russian Revolution, which is more advanced, a Soviet state, that is a state based on councils which are centered in the factories, the workplaces, in the army barracks, among the poor peasants and so on, and that is the state that withers away. Not the bourgeois state. That's the argument. And Engels, he quotes Engels, quite a good article called On Authority by Engels, in which he argues against the anarchists. He says, look, you know, you talk about being against all forms of authority, but a revolution is an authoritarian act. One class imposes its will on another by force of arms, and it must keep its arms and defend its conquests, i.e. organize itself into a state, and maintain some kind of coercive apparatus to defeat the counter-revolution if it wants to actually win. And so the question of state, of what to do, doesn't end with the overthrow of the capitalists. You still have to be organized to transform the society, be prepared to suppress efforts by the old order to reestablish the old state. But like I said, and this is really where Lenin concludes, it's a state that works itself out of a job because it's a state based on the democratically organized, conscious, and armed mass. Once the resistance is broken, and over time, as society is reorganized in a new way, the state withers away, along with the disappearance of class divisions, leaving basic forms of administration and planning necessary in any society, but which can be done by anyone based on rudimentary education and are not positions that are elevated into some, you know, special job. You know, woo, I'm an administrator. You know, so well, who fucking cares? You know, you're. Anyone can really do that, you know. I mean, once you strip away the halo, the mystical halo behind states, and you realize that there are certain social functions that need to be organized and planned, like, you know, I guess you could have said in the past, distributing the mail, maybe not. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. Certain things have to be organized and planned, but that organization and plan doesn't necessitate the existence of a state. It necessitates a well-trained, well-educated population capable of doing multiple jobs and assuming multiple responsibilities to make sure that things are organized. Anybody who's ever been to summer camp and has been in charge of a task, that's a planned set of tasks, knows that human beings are capable of organizing that way in a non-coercive way. Your job today is to take out the garbage. Your job tomorrow is to cook the burgers on the grill. Your job the next day is, and you go, oh, that's my job, fine, no big deal. You don't go, oh, you can't tell me what to do, you coercive bastard. You know, I mean, you know, because everybody knows we're all working together. No one's gaining from this. We're all gaining from our own collective collaboration. That's the society on a writ large that we want to get to. So that's essentially the basic argument. How much time have I got left?
You got 8 minutes.
Oh, great. I just want to make a few points. I'm just going to throw out a few things. So there's a long quote in State and Revolution by Engels, and I think which I think sums up the whole argument, but also I think is really important, really corrective to the whole tradition. Part of the problem about State and Revolution, not with the book itself, is that, I don't know how many people here have read it. Okay, in the first chapter, I don't know if people, it's pretty famous, Lenin says, what has happened to Marx has happened to many figures. Once they die, they're canonized, and all the sting is taken out of their ideas, and their ideas are presented in a way that's acceptable to existing society and turned into milquetoast and, you know, therefore rendered harmless. I'm just paraphrasing. And the reality is the same thing, of course, in Russia happened to Lenin's ideas, you know, and that Martin Luther King, I mean, you can name all kinds of people where that's happened to. The sting is taken out of their ideas. the irony of State and Revolution is that you have Marx and Engels developing these revolutionary ideas about transforming societies, the self-emancipation of the working class, that the state must be destroyed, must be replaced by forms of direct democratic control by the working class, a new kind of state erected, one that works itself out of a job, the state where there's a way, as we develop a classless society where the free development of each is dependent on the free development of all those things from Marx. And then it gets lost with the development, especially particularly German social democracy. It becomes socialism is about taking over the existing state. It's about getting our representatives in office. And it no longer is about the self-emancipation of the working class. And that becomes, for a period, right at the moment when Marxism and socialism is becoming a mass movement around the world, development of mass parties. Then Lenin, Pannekoek, Bukharin, and then Lenin, who tries to go back and systematize it, says, we've been wrong. And at that very moment that he makes that assessment, the February Revolution breaks out, and flesh is put on Lenin's ideas, and Lenin puts also flesh on the Russian Revolution, because and there you see the interesting relation between theory and practice, because Lenin comes in and rearms the Bolshevik Party, but guess what? Lenin had to rearm himself first before he could do that. Before he could see clearly that Soviets, in 1905, the Bolsheviks said the Soviets could be the basis of a provisional government which would hand power to a constituent assembly because Russia could go no further than a bourgeois revolution, right? But Lenin then reexamines it and says, wait a minute, the Soviets could actually be the basis of workers' power and the Russian Revolution could be the beginning of world socialist revolution. We can begin to take those steps. Obviously, we can't take them fully. Russia's too backward economically. But if it spreads and we can hold on to power, this could be the basis of a transformation of the world. The revolution happens. The Comintern is born, in which you have new parties developing around the world, and some of the mass parties, which break from that reformism of the Second International, those parties that ended up supporting their own governments, these monstrous military machines, their own governments, and it ended up kind of distorting Marxism and the whole idea of working class internationalism. And you have these new parties forming, and what are they based on? Break with the reformists, but form united fronts for purposes of immediate struggle without dissolving yourself into the struggle. March separately, strike together. Work in parliaments, but have no illusions in them, because workers are going to have to form Soviet-type state and destroy the existing state. That's the foundation of the Comintern, the initial years of the Comintern. The problem is, what's in state and revolution is not accepted prior to 1917. It becomes the standardly accepted argument about Marxism and revolution, the working class and revolution, the role of the working class, what it needs to do in the revolution. And then, with the rise of Stalin in the mid-20s, it's gone again. And the reality is that and socialism becomes the strengthening of the state, right? Everyone, once again, identifies socialism with the strengthening of the state. And if you go back to Marx's theory of the state, how do we understand the Soviet Union? Well, working backwards from Marx's materialist method, you could say, well, if it's true that the state is a product of irreconcilable class contradictions, what does the fact that under Stalin, the Russian state keeps getting bigger and stronger and more monstrous tell us about the existence of classes in Russia after the degeneration of the Russian Revolution? In other words, clearly the rise of Stalinism had to, even if you work backwards from that point, has to involve some reassertion of class relations in that society, which is partly what Tony Cliff does in a chapter in State Capitalism in Russia, which is a very good book. The point is, though, is that, and I don't have time to go into this, unfortunately, but Lenin's ideas are not accepted by the vast majority of the left. And I wish I had more time to go into it. People should look into it. But there's a Socialist Register, which comes out every year. It's a great publication. Comes out with a series of essays on different questions every year. The one this year, I think, is on strategy and revolution, Russian Revolution, and there's a whole series of essays. A lot of them are about Latin America. Some of them are about Europe. And their politics are The Politics of a Guy Named Polansis. I'm not going to go into him. He was a Greek Marxist in the 1970s. But essentially what Polansis argued is that workers' councils lead to Stalinism. An attempt to implement a society based on direct democracy leads to bureaucratization. And so while social democracy is not an alternative, you know, just electing the right people, neither is the direct democracy of Soviet power, of workers' councils. Therefore, you need some judicious combination in which mass struggle from below puts pressure on the left-wingers that we elect into office to do the right thing, and that there's some combination of those things. That is much more popular now among whole sections of the left in Europe and in Latin America than Lenin's arguments. And so the question of how you achieve socialism, that it's emancipation from below, that it has to destroy the existing state because that state is a state that's designed to reinforce and you know, keep in place existing class relations, that state cannot be utilized by our movement. We have to destroy that state. That whole argument has to be reintroduced into the movements, into the political life of the growing left. So this is not just an abstract question. It may seem more distant than it did then. I mean, when Lenin wrote this, he was writing it in the middle of a revolution. The actuality of revolution, you know, I mean, this may seem like dry theory. He's going back to see what Marx said about, you know, the rise of the state and so on. But actually, when it comes down to it, the question of the state and state power is about how are we going to get from this society to one in which human beings are free. And so, you know, buy it, read it, sell it.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.